Thank you for joining us today. This is Scott Becker with a webinar/podcast on the discussion of the state of private equity, key trends and issues. We've got four great panelists today. We've got Tom Aronson, partner and the founder of Monroe Capital, great credit fund, private credit fund. Brad Perkett, principal and one of the founders of Matchpoint Partners, middle market investment bank who does a lot of private equity funds, both on the buy and sell side. Rick Kess, partner at RSM. And we should have Luke Mitchell joining us as well, who's a managing director at Edgemont. Today's format, very straightforward. We'll have each of our panelists introduce themselves, then talk about what they see as sort of the state of private equity today, what's going on in the deal market, what's happening with valuations, sort of what are they seeing. The next question each of them will talk about is what they're seeing with portfolio companies and what's going on in sort of the environment, sort of in the midst or post-COVID or however you sort of view it, depending on your perspective as to where we're at today. Tom Aronson, you want to take a moment to introduce yourself?
Sure. Thanks, Scott. As Scott alluded to before, my name is Tom Aronson. I am a co-founder of Monroe Capital. We started the fund. We're a private debt fund in 2004. We have about $9 billion of assets under management. We focus on unitranche financing, mainly for companies with EBITDA between $5 and $35 million. And we're very diversified in the transactions we look at, from technology to healthcare, business services, manufacturing, distributors, and opportunistic as well.
Thanks. And I watched the growth from a front row seat. It's sort of amazing what you've accomplished over the last decade or so, just magnificent. Rick Kess, do you want to take a moment to introduce yourself?
Sure. Thanks, Scott. I'm Rick Kess. I'm a partner at RSM. RSM is the fifth largest professional service firm in the nation, and we have a very incredible focus on private equity and serving private equity firms, both on their transaction side, post-deal side, pre-deal side. So we kind of watch a client through the entire deal flow and work on various different aspects of any sort of transaction that might occur. So very excited to be here, and thanks for the opportunity, Scott.
And really, again, an RSM, a fascinating story of the growth of the sell side quality of earnings practice from almost nothing 10 years ago to one of the lead one or two firms in the country that does the Q of A analysis and supply side work. So thank you. Brad Perkett, do you want to take a moment to introduce yourself?
Sure. Thank you, Scott. Thanks for having me today. I'm Brad Perkett. I am a founder and managing partner of Matchpoint Partners. We are a boutique investment bank founded in 2009. So founded in the last recession. We're a team of 14. We focus exclusively on healthcare services and digital health, both at the private equity and venture capital level. And my background is as a CEO in healthcare. I've been CEO of 8 companies in healthcare and digital health over the last 25 years. And what distinguishes us at Matchpoint is each of my partners has also been a CEO of a venture or private equity-backed healthcare company. So it's investment banking with a different kind of focus.
And a great record on closing and a great group you've established. Luke, do you want to take a second to introduce yourself?
Yeah, sure. Thanks for including us. So this is Luke Mitchell. I'm a managing director and co-founder of Edgemont Partners. We're a boutique healthcare investment bank founded by myself and my two partners. We all came out of bulge bracket banks. Founded the firm in late 2002, early 2003 to bring bulge bracket expertise and deal execution to bear on lower middle market and middle market healthcare companies. We've been doing nothing else for the past 18 years, and I spend all my time working within healthcare services. You know, we're typically working on deals in the range of kind of call it 100 million to 400 million of enterprise value. Probably about 90% of that is working with founder, owner, entrepreneurs, so people who've never had institutional capital behind them. We remain very active with primarily focusing on asset-light healthcare companies. So we don't do a lot of IT, but do a lot in healthcare services, physician staffing, behavioral, post-acute, things like that. And I think year to date, we've closed probably about 12 transactions, six or seven of which have been since the COVID pandemic distracted us all. So we've been fortunate enough to be very active over the past couple of months.
Thank you, Luke. I'll ask each of you to comment on the following question. And Tom, I'll start with you. And the question will be, what's your sense of the current PE environment? Are funds investing aggressively again? What does deal flow look like? Is it picking up? Are there sectors that you're seeing particularly interest in? Well, let's get you to talk for about 1 to 2 minutes on that. Tom, do you want to kick us off?
Sure. In terms of, you know, the private equity market and what we're seeing, you know, at Monroe, when COVID hit, we had about $1 billion of signed deals. Immediately, the private equity community, which was about 80% of our signed deals, put their deals on pause just to see what and how companies were performing. And, you know, after about, oh, I'd say 45, 60 days, we started looking at add-on acquisitions, companies that private equity firms thought were, you know, good, healthy, COVID resistant, recession resistant businesses. And we started looking and funding some of those. Then after about 30, 60 days more, the shift has been, which kind of brings us to today, focused now on platform acquisitions, good, strong companies, companies that have performed well through COVID. And, you know, we've seen that and we've started to fund some of those. I would say, you know, for the companies that are COVID resistant, we're starting to see multiples come back. They're very healthy multiples in certain sectors. In terms of the sectors we're seeing, healthcare certainly is extremely active for, you know, businesses, all types of healthcare related businesses. Our technology, tech enabled, and most importantly, recurring revenue businesses have also been receiving very strong multiples. So I would say, you know, now the focus really is on those type of businesses. Multiples are back to where they were before COVID. And I would say the businesses that are affected by COVID, the hospitality, restaurant, airlines, other leisure, of course, those are the ones that private equity firms, except for the distressed ones, private equity firms are really staying away from. But the market is strong, and we're looking to finance additional platform companies.
And Tom, from a finance perspective, multiples, leverage ratios, are those going to be a little tighter post this COVID situation, or any sense of what that looks like?
Sure. From a finance, just to give a quick overview on that, you know, when COVID hit, pricing went up dramatically, probably 400 or 500 basis points. And, you know, leverage requests went significantly down. Everyone was getting much more conservative. I would say, you know, fast forward to where we are today, leverage requests are probably a turn to turn and a half less than they were when COVID struck. Pricing is, you know, probably about 100 basis points higher. And then overall documentation, covenants are a little bit tighter, legal documents are a little stronger. But, you know, by and large, lenders are in the market looking to support their good, strong relationships. You know, we also do financing of non-sponsored businesses as well. And we see a lot of activity in that area, you know, because some of the private equity firms, you know, put those deals on pause. There's still opportunities for lenders to lend in for dividends and for other growth opportunities. So we're getting closer. We're inching closer to our pre-COVID days. But, you know, now we're all focused on how long this is going to last and if we're going to be in a prolonged recessionary period. And obviously, we have an election coming up. So there are a lot of things that are causing, I would say, lenders and even private equity firms to, you know, just be cautious as we go forward.
And Tom, it's probably easy for you to make a call on what will happen with the election, so feel free to take a shot at it. I'm just kidding. But that does lead to another level of uncertainty, the election and so forth. Thank you. Rick Kess, You've got the busiest quality of earnings practice in the business. What are you folks seeing in terms of, you know, the market today with PE funds and so forth?
Yeah, Scott, I mean, I would agree our private equity transaction advisory practice is busy. You know, they're back kind of fully booked, if you will, from a client deck perspective. Definitely March, April, early part of May, you know, they were honestly, you know, a little bit concerned with the outlook. You know, I think what changed obviously was just people becoming a little bit more inquisitive. And, you know, so I think what we saw was this pretty big drop in deal count and deal activity early on during COVID. And like Tom mentioned, you know, industries that had some, you know, level of insulation from COVID concerns, recession concerns, other things of that nature, you definitely have seen a pretty healthy comeback. So our folks are back kind of working on deals, full time. You know, they're back to, you know, overbooked and really, you know, a strong business sector for us for sure. You know, I think from, kind of a forward looking perspective, one of the things, you know, we started talking with some of our clients about in the last couple of days really is, you know, what could happen with, you know, an open seat in the Supreme Court. And what that might mean from a challenge to the ACA, and if that is enough of a disruption to put deals on pause now until, you know, I think the court's supposed to hear a case, what is it, a week after the election is held? So, you know, some early November, if you will. So I think there is some question about, you know, that and whether or not that will change, you know, any sort of view. Obviously, Monday and Tuesday were relatively bad from a publicly traded healthcare related company perspective. You saw a pretty big drop in stock prices, if you will, but obviously that's somewhat kind of reactionary versus private equity having a little bit more of a long-term focus on investment thesis. So I'd say from that perspective, we're just kind of watching for now and kind of interested to see how that plays out. But that could be one thing that changes you know, some of the anticipated deals that, you know, are kind of in the works right now.
And Rick, is that due to concerns about the continuation of Medicaid expansion? Because that seems to be the most serious revenue source that would impact private equity.
Well, I think the Medicaid expansion is a question. And I think, you know, the essential set of benefits that, you know, commercial plans are basically required to cover, you know, and you think about behavioral health services, obviously we saw a really big increase in volume of activity in behavioral health over the last few years. And if that somehow was something that'd be challenged and what services, you know, a health plan would cover as part of like an essential benefit set, would that change, you know, even the commercial market, for instance? But definitely the Medicaid expansion is another big issue. If you think of things like substance abuse or eating disorder clinics or things of that nature, you know, a lot of them tend to have some level of Medicaid payer mix. So could really change, you know, from two different angles, if you will.
Fascinating. And quite frankly, the Supreme Court is 4-4 in this decision. Then it essentially affirms the lower court decision to outlaw sort of the ACA or make it deemed illegal, what have you, or unconstitutional. And then it goes back to the lower court, which I think wanted to take it up further. Brad Burkett, some of your thoughts on what you're seeing in the private equity environment and deal flow and so forth.
Sure. You know, it's the 6 months period of COVID has sort of been a tale of two cities. As one of the panelists mentioned, there was a big slowdown in March and April. We, interestingly, sometimes do more venture capital work and sometimes do more private equity. We saw our private equity work pretty much dry up in March and April, but our venture work exploded. So we're coming off the 6 month busiest period we've ever had. And the deals have split across different things. If you can put telehealth in your name somewhere, the deal's going to get done. That's starting to wear off a little bit because we've been flooded with telehealth companies. But as the spring and summer started to wear on, we saw the private equity firms come back to life. I think they spent a lot of time on their own companies. And we're involved in a number of buy sides where they're being opportunistic, because a lot of firms have done quite well in COVID and a lot of firms have been wounded. I'm not sure how much. And a lot of the private equity platforms are being opportunistic in terms of shopping right now. So we've seen a lot of activity on that side. The prices are down, but you have the classic mix of buyers are trying to push the prices down and sellers are not really happy about that. So we have closed 4 deals during this period. 2 started before COVID, 2 started and closed during COVID. We have 2 more under LOI. And the ones that are closing are all deals that have direct positive exposure coming out of COVID, which means they have some sort of solution or answer for their revenues are doubling and tripling due to the pandemic. So we continue to see a lot of activity. And then on the technology side, when you see Teladoc and Livongo coming together, you know, digital health has been a venture capital area for the last 5 or 6 or 7 years. Private equity has stayed away because some of those companies haven't really reached critical mass. Now all of a sudden you see a lot of the digital health companies going public. And now when you get a Livongo with a enormous valuation from Teladoc, we've seen some of the smaller private equity firms starting to kick around in the Series C, Series D kind of venture market. So we're seeing some interesting crossover because there are real opportunities to be had now that digital health is getting a proven business model. But again, we continue to be very busy. I think people were very skeptical about all provider practices and hospital businesses and those things. And our clients that are invested in center businesses of any kind really slowed down, as you all can imagine. Now some of the providers are bouncing right back to where they were before. Others are adopting telehealth in other ways and their revenues are coming back, even though maybe visits are down. So I think we're seeing a lot of adaptation on the provider side, and there hasn't been a shakeout. We have a restructuring business as well, and we girded up in March and April expecting a large amount of restructuring on the provider side, and we just haven't seen it. It's bubbling along, but it hasn't hit the levels that I think people saw. So I think we see a very strong market in healthcare. Prices are down a little bit, but it's a competitive marketplace, particularly around telehealth and other digital services that help folks get around the pandemic.
And Brad, it's a fascinating comment you make about restructuring practices, because everybody seemed to have geared up the restructuring practices, and while there's been an uptick in it, it's not been nowhere near sort of the tidal wave that I think people anticipated. I think very telling, fascinating comment. Luke, your thoughts on what you're seeing in the environment today in private equity investing?
Yeah, I would say, I mean, I think my experience echoes pretty closely what Brad is seeing. You know, we are focused much more on services businesses versus tech-enabled or IT. So I think it's a little bit of a dynamic. You know, if you would have asked me end of March, early April, I probably would have had a much more dire outlook. But a couple of things I think have been really heartening. One, you know, particularly for, and I spend most of my time working with physician practices and PPMs, you know, volumes, particularly for surgery-driven practices, which is gastro, urology, dermatology, ophthalmology, the volumes have snapped back very, very quickly. You know, I think there's a little bit of noise in those numbers. You know, we're seeing a lot of groups that are doing 110, 120% of where they were LY. I think part of that is that recovery is overstated because there is some amount of backlog that they're needing to work through, and where they end up on kind of a steady state basis is yet to be determined. But you know, we are for the most part dealing with non-discretionary medical procedures, and patients need to have their cancers checked out, you know, whether there's COVID going on or not. I think kind of more broadly speaking, you know, a couple of the fundamental truths are there's still a tremendous amount of capital out there with healthcare focused investors, and there's a dearth of really high quality companies. So I think, you know, we're seeing in the processes we're running, and we've had second round bids and a couple deals in the past couple of weeks, you know, we're seeing a little bit of structure being introduced by private equity investors, But for the most part, valuations are holding up really nicely. And I think, you know, it really behooves the sponsors to get creative on both how they think about structure and valuation. Because the reality is, you know, any owner of a high quality business always retains the option of just not doing a transaction now. Very few of these business owners absolutely have to sell this year. And unless they feel like they're being kept pretty close to whole, they will elect to just wait, you know, 12 months until they have a clean TTM period, and then we'll choose to elect then. And so we, for the most part, we've seen sponsors really get creative and step up and understanding the, you know, the non-discretionary nature of a lot of these businesses and appropriately valuing them.
And a couple questions. Are the processes you're seeing very competitive right now, sort of like they were pre-COVID? One question. And are people starting to talk at all? I've just heard it recently talking about potential tax changes under a Biden administration, if the Democrats win House, Senate, and presidency, that's driving a little bit of concerns about moving things along in terms of deal timing. Any sense of those two issues, Luke?
Yeah, so on the first question, how competitive are the processes? They're actually very, it depends on the sector. We do a ton of work in pharmaceutical services, which, you know, we're seeing all-time highs on valuations, but candidly, those sectors have been impacted much less by COVID. We're seeing, you know, as competitive processes in post-acute, home health, and hospice. On the physician PPM, I would say the bidder pool is slightly thinner, only because some of the bidders themselves are dealing with their own operational issues. But we have not seen valuations decrease really at all. And so that's, I take a great degree of encouragement from that. You know, the question about the tax environment is one that I'm answering more and more frequently. I mean, one of the best generators of business for us is, you know, CPAs who love to tell their business owners that long-term cap gains is going to 50% effective January 1. You know, frankly, I think that is dramatically overblown, but it is, I mean, you know, 6 weeks ago, I was not having that conversation, and now I'm having that conversation on every pitch that we have. So, you know, I think regardless of whether or not that's the actual outcome, I do think it is something that is very much on the minds of business owners. I've yet to do a deal in 20 years where the seller was primarily motivated by the tax treatment, but I do think it is a really important consideration as they think about timing.
Thank you very, very much. Tom, let me come back to you to pivot back your way, and I'm going to ask each of you the question of what you're seeing with portfolio companies and sort of in this eerie period of time. I know people are talking more about is a company COVID resistant, is it COVID resilient? You know, are bankruptcies gearing up? And depending on sector, they may or may not be. Tom, do you want to give us a flavor for what you're seeing with portfolio companies?
Sure. As a a lender, we were kind of inundated with requests when COVID hit, with draw requests on revolvers and delayed draw term loans. Really, the position of many of the private equity firms we dealt with was, you know, let's make sure that we have liquidity in our businesses to get to the other side. So, you know, that was a big focus of everybody immediately post, initial effects of COVID. And we've kind of gotten through that period. Everything stabilized. Many of the firms that drew down on the revolvers have now paid those back, and everyone is still very hyper focused on that. In terms of our overall portfolio, as I mentioned, we have, you know, $9 billion of assets under management. Really, when we put our arms around all of our businesses, and again, we're very diversified, not just healthcare, but technology and all different sorts of businesses. About 15 to 20% of our businesses were, I would say, very much affected by COVID. The rest, as I mentioned before, either were stable or benefiting from COVID. And I would say pretty much every one of those businesses has, with private equity sponsors, have stepped up to make sure that there's adequate liquidity, have maybe shifted their focus when they could. And, you know, in some instances, we had companies shift and, you know, start manufacturing hand sanitizer and other PPP equipment. So, you know, we've had everyone really focus on stabilizing their businesses. I think we're all in a very good position if this doesn't go for a prolonged period of time. But it was only about 15 to 20% that really were affected, because, we stayed away overall with large concentrations in, hospitality and leisure and some of the industry sectors that were really hard hit. That being said, we had some like healthcare, dental practice that obviously those businesses were shut down for a period of time, and those are coming back, very strongly. And we're working through that. And I think by and large, we'll be very happy of how our portfolio performs through this COVID crisis.
Oh, fantastic. Thank you, Tom. Rick, your thoughts on what you're seeing across sort of RSM and the world with portfolio companies?
Yeah, I mean, I think we're seeing a lot of the same stuff other folks are saying, that, different sectors are seeing different impacts here. And, I think one thing that, we started to get a lot of questions on just this week was HHS has released its reporting requirements for the Provider Relief Fund. And it's really kind of flipped the script a bit on how a lot of our clients thought that they were going to be able to kind of meet the terms and conditions, and changing it from kind of a lost revenue calculation to a lost operating income perspective. And for some of our clients, that won't impact them that much. And others, this will be a dramatic difference in how they were anticipating kind of meeting and adhering to the terms and conditions to that program. So, I think there's a lot of moving parts with that program, and then the interaction between that program and, the PPP loan funding and all the activity that might have happened between those two, just really kind of changing the game for a lot of our clients on the fly. And some of these clients are in the middle of deals, and whether or not the a buyer or seller are looking at those from a perspective of, okay, well, this adds too much risk, we want you to pay the PPP loan back, or what have you, it's all different things are kind of out there in this space. So with these two federal programs kind of coming into potential acquisition targets and so forth, I think that it's just caused a lot of noise in the system that previously really never existed for a lot of our portfolio clients or potential bolt-on or add-on acquisition targets, because a lot of times governmental grants just didn't end up going to for-profit industry, and now they have. So that's really one new thing that I think is out there that's kind of adding complexity to the work we do from a transaction advisory perspective.
Fascinating. And Brad, you've been the CEO of a handful of portfolio companies over time. First question, are you glad that at this time you're not the CEO of a portfolio company? And second question is, what are you sort of seeing out there with portfolio companies and companies that you work with and talk to every day? What's your sense of the environment and how they're recovering and how they're doing?
Sure. Now, as to your first question, Scott, I much enjoy being an advisor rather than a CEO on the front lines during this. So the CEOs have had a very difficult time. There's been sort of two types of private equity firms, that panicked immediately and private equity firms that panicked the next day. So the CEOs have been really under the gun to really get their cash in hand. So again, we saw March, April, May was a real focus on cash, very conservative, hiring plans were slashed, et cetera, et cetera. And back in those days, even though we still don't know how long this will last, people didn't know how long the lockdowns would last back then. So there was a lot of cash planning, a lot of wondering about raising capital, which was not really easy to do in those periods. I think companies are starting to come out of that, and companies that weathered the storm okay are now looking to be buyers. We see the private equity portfolio companies as platforms are looking to scoop up smaller deals. We had a couple of smaller clients who hit rocky times, and acquisition offers were coming in April and May, basically saying, we'll take over your assets for you. That seems to have passed, and now we're getting back to more normal kinds of valuations, but the buyers are continuing to be aggressive. So it's been a rough time because it's always a debate of, do you go for growth or do you manage your cash? And for companies caught on the wrong side of that, it made for a pretty rough spring and summer. But things do seem to be stabilizing and coming back to some, I don't know if it's a new normal, but it's more normal than it was.
Tom had mentioned, Brad, to pick up on one of your points, starting to see a lot of companies pay back the revolvers they took out for extra liquidity just in case. Where do you see companies trying to manage cash? How much cash are they trying to keep on hand? Are you seeing them trying to keep on hand a lot more than they typically used to, just in case lockdowns, not so much lockdowns will come back, and people expect that, but just in case there's some kind of prolonged real problems in the economy again and so forth. Are you seeing people trying to hoard cash a little bit more than they used to?
Yeah, they are. I think they're getting more conservative in their cash needs. They're conserving cash. If somebody used to try and keep 60 or 90 days worth of cash, we're seeing that stretch out to 180 days. People are being more careful about signing up for longer term commitments. The PPP loans have been all over the place. As one of the speakers alluded to, some of our clients and the private equity firms said, don't take them, don't go anywhere near them. Other ones sort of ran hard at it and tried to gobble it up. And we have a couple of situations and deals where there's a big debate between the buyer and the seller who's responsible for the PPP loan if it isn't forgiven. And how do we treat that? Is it an escrow? Is it a direct payment up front? So we're seeing the PPP loans, which at the time seemed to be really terrific and a lifesaver, cause some complications now. But to your overall question, yeah, we've seen people just get much more conservative about cash because the private equity firms have let their portfolio companies know that if they need more, it's going to be tougher to get. And when you need it, and unless it's for a great acquisition, if you need it, the pricing is not going to be as attractive as it was pre-COVID.
Thank you. And the PPP loans, we've also seen plenty of private equity funds take the position that because of affiliation rules and other rules that their portfolio companies weren't really able to take the PPP loans. Luke, let me ask you a question. What are you seeing with portfolio companies today, your sense of what's going on the ground today?
Yeah, I mean, it's the main topic that comes up when we're talking with sponsors. I mean, you know, I think they're generally reaching out to us wanting to understand, you know, in the PPM space in particular, I would say, you know, a third of the businesses are thriving, a third are treading water. And I do think that, you know, for the other third, they're going to be significantly challenged. And I think we're going to read a lot, an increasing number of headlines about lenders taking over.
Where is that other third? That third that's a debacle. It's obviously, is that places that were just over leveraged? Or is that places that just have business models that have really slowed down because of COVID? Or is it a mix of both?
I would say it's primarily groups that were not properly capitalized in the first place, you know, and that were already starting to bump into covenant issues, you know, pre-COVID. I think that's it. You know, for the businesses that are really still were exhibiting strong growth, you know, had a really strong balance sheet, I would not typically put them into that category. I think it's been a mixed bag. I think for the most part, the groups that I speak with are feeling very good about how the businesses are rebounding. I think pretty much across the board, you know, investors are expecting the impact of this year to really push out their hold period for at least another 18 to 24 months. For the folks who are newer in their investments, it's actually in a kind of a perverse sense creating some pretty compelling opportunities because the organic growth story, I do believe, is going to become marginally easier. And I think the growth through acquisition is going to get somewhat easier. So for the folks who completed really big deals in December, January, February, I think they're kind of, moaning about their luck, you know, closing those big deals at that time. But I do think in some ways it's going to make the growth trajectory of their businesses easier than it might have been otherwise.
They'll have a failing now, and then they'll see serious growth in the rebound stage. But their long-term situation depends a little bit on just how well capitalized they were and whether they were just way over leveraged.
That's exactly right. Yeah, I think that's the case.
Are there specific sectors in healthcare that you look at and say, that sector is in more trouble than that sector. Is there, do you have a sense of that, or is it really just dependent on capital structure?
No, I think there, my personal view is I think there are some sectors that are more challenged than others. You know, and look, Scott, you know better than I do. I mean, I do have a lot of questions about, you know, what for out of hospital surgery volume, you know, what that looks like in the surgery center. Everything that I've heard is that surgery centers in particular are being really hard hit. You know, not that we're necessarily going to see more volume going into the hospitals, but how do the physician groups manage through, you know, and physician groups that are for the most part pretty leanly capitalized, how do they manage through the next year or so? You know, I think in a lot of the specialties and sectors that we cover, there is kind of this latent discretionary spend that I think a lot of sponsors don't necessarily realize exists. And so, you know, I think right now people are feeling really good, but we're kind of in that honeymoon period where we're still living off of some of the stimulus that's out there. What does that discretionary spend look like, you know, 12 months from now? Are people still willing to go for premium lenses or, you know, premium derm services or things that may not be absolutely medically necessary? And how does that, how do those trends shift? Because they can be a really meaningful driver of profitability for a lot of these companies. And I don't have an answer to that, but that's of anything, that's probably what gives me the most kind of concern is how does this, how do the economic implications of all this, how does that trickle through the health system and the decision making on the part of patients? Because I don't think anyone really knows the answer to that right now.
Certainly, especially if you have a prolonged recession or the stimulus fund, and they're talking about renewing stimulus funds, but that can only go on for so long, and at some point that will take just money out of people's pockets and their ability to pay for certain services that are elective, truly elective and discretionary. I want to thank our four panelists. Just a pleasure to visit with the four of you today. Tom Aronson, Rick Kess, Brad Burkett, Luke Mitchell, all magnificent professionals. Tom's obviously with one of the biggest credit funds in the business, Monroe Capital, Rick with RSM, Brad and Luke have each founded their own investment banks, great, great bankers, really focused people, fantastic. We also had a great audience today. Our next webinar on private equity will be October 27th. We're looking forward to that. This will be distributed shortly. I want to thank our producer, Jeremy Kaur, and his team, Executive Podcast Services, always fantastic. And our audience, anybody that's ever interested in joining another webinar, or if you have an interest or an idea on a topic or speaker, please feel free to reach out to myself or Jeremy Kaur. We'd love to hear your ideas. Love to include you. Again, Tom, Brad, Rick, Luke, thank you so much for joining us today. Just great, great thoughts. Thank you very much for your perspectives. Thank you.